Hi, everybody. My name's Cole Walton. I'm here with Harrison.
What's up?
And welcome back to What's Brewin'. We're going to be talking about ancient gods from ancient Egypt and all that type of stuff, specifically called the Anunnaki. And we're going to get right into it. We got some interesting theories to go over, so this is going to be really exciting. So, Harrison, you know, we talked about this in the past about, you know, beings that created, you know, the pyramids and stuff. And we talked in the past also about how we don't think that the pyramids were created by human beings.
There's no chance.
We thought that ancient technology had to be used to create these pyramids. So what do you think in general about the Anunnaki?
I think they could be somewhat real. Well, they were obviously real, but I think what was being told about them was somewhat real. They were said to be ancient deities, which are gods. These beings were the beings that influenced these tribes to build worshiping grounds such as ancient temples, as like the Aztec temples and the pyramids of Giza. And they also, some of the gods that they worshipped were Anina. She is the goddess of love, war, and fertility. And she is also associated with sensuality, procreation, divine law, and political power. Another god is Aniki. This god is the god of water, knowledge, crafts, and creation, and one of the Anunnaki, so one of the original gods. And then the last one is Ki. Ki is the earth goddess of the Sumerian religion, chief consort of the god. She's the sky god, and also she has been called the guardian of heaven.
Wow, that's super interesting. So all of these gods, we believe at least, were the people that influenced these people to build the ancient pyramids of Giza and all of that. I also personally believe they were the beings that created the idea of connecting our world as a planetary civilization, using the pyramids they created to make almost a civilization for themselves. And it's been super interesting talking about it because we always think of these people, you know, the Sumerians and the Babylonians, Akkadians, you know, these people worship literal deities. You know, and these deities, to our knowledge, were very, we never thought of them as actual gods, as actual people that we think in terms of religion. But to go on to another topic, I'd like to talk about something that is a little bit more popular in general media, and that is like reptilian overlords. So we always think of these beings, right? We never actually think of them as physical things. We always think of them as, you know, godlike beings that don't have a physical body or something. Anyways, in our opinion, they can be reptilian overlords.
Yes.
Now hear us out.
Just hear us out.
Now hear us out. This is something I always thought about in the past. You know, when it comes to talking about an ancient civilization, you look at the ancient hieroglyphic images that they carved into stone thousands and thousands of years ago. You look at these carvings, these hieroglyphics, and you see these beings on there that do not resemble, first of all, they do not resemble human, and they do not resemble anything godlike in a physical form. So to us, that may seem as reptilian.
They look like lizards.
They look like lizards. What can we say? But on another note, these beings could have been such a higher power that to come down to our physical world, they may have, you know, become a, for example, a lizard.
A lizard,
It seems crazy to people, but it's true.
Maybe that's what these ancient gods were. And like, have you noticed that a lot of the like Egyptian gods, that they were like some sort of animal, like dogs, cats?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what if that's how they had to come? So because they couldn't take the form of like a human.
Exactly. Yeah, because in ancient Egyptian culture, cats and dogs, these used to be put on, you know, temples and stuff. If you look at ancient temples in Egypt, they have big statues of dogs, like a, you know, a human looking figure, but with a dog head. Or they used to worship cat-like beings, and these used to resemble certain things, resemble certain qualities about their cultures and everything.
A lot of pharaohs were buried with like dog and cat statues that they were gonna, it was, they believed that these dogs and cats would protect them in the afterlife.
Exactly.
And like animals, they could have been like late descendants from these reptilian overlords, these gods, these Anunnaki gods, these deities. And just hear me out. What if the queen was reptilian?
Well, a lot of like the British family, maybe. Or even Mark Zuckerberg. Yeah, nobody wants to say it, but we think he is a lizard man.
He is a lizard man.
He is not real. MF-er back there is not real.
Oh, yeah. He is not real. He is definitely a lizard. Did you also see that, like, he has, like, a thing of hot sauce on display in his house? Mm-hmm. Just, like, on a bookshelf?
What type of human being wants to do that? I think that's an Egyptian god.
Maybe. Have you ever noticed that, like, animals, they have a lot of them have, like, hair, tons of hair, and so they don't get sunburned. And if they don't have hair, then they won't get sunburned. And notice how humans, they don't get sunburned, and, like, our eyes are really fragile to the sun. What if, just hear me out, what if we were placed on this planet?
By these Anunnaki.
Yeah, by these deities, by these gods.
That's not a crazy thing to, you know, think about, because obviously in the past we've talked about, you know, alien contact with these beings, but we have never thought about extraterrestrial life being Anunnaki, yeah, being deities, being actually beings from this earth that have created civilizations, you know, and we've never really talked about the fact that there's also archaeological facts that back this stuff up. There's a lot of archaeological facts from the past that back up stuff about, for example, hieroglyphic carvings and all of that. I talked about this earlier in this segment about beings. This also ties into a bunch of crazy stuff about how Anunnaki influenced our cultures, these ancient cultures like the Sumerian cultures, the Babylonian cultures, healing methods, all this crazy stuff that is now advanced, really, for our civilization. There are past archaeological findings that base this. So, for example, in the past, there have been many archaeological findings of people digging in the ancient Egyptian desert, finding and looking through temples in the pyramids, and they have found many revealing things about ancient Egypt, and not just that, about what type of technology these people had. We don't think the ancient pyramids were built by humans. We think they're built by higher level beings. To tie into that, we honestly think, and no doubt in our minds, we really truly believe that these beings gave us this higher technology. We believe that these descendants of gods, these ancient beings, these deities, Aniki, Ki, these deities and beings that came to ancient Egypt thousands and thousands of years ago, even reptilian overlords, it may seem crazy. These beings could have brought this advanced technology. These beings could have brought ancient healing methods, technological findings. They could have created beacons for our civilization. If you didn't know, people, and this is a statistical scientific fact that I have seen many times on the internet about how the center polar coordinate of the actual pyramids of Giza is the exact number of the speed of light.
I'm pretty sure they also line up with like stars too.
They
like
line up stars. With stars. They line up with exact polar coordinates of all other ancient pyramids on our planet. And they are approximately 300 million miles per hour, something like that.
Yeah.
But it's this exact coordinate by the decimal that these people accidentally created.
There's no way.
It's not possible.
It is impossible.
It is impossible. My point exactly that these beings, these Anunnaki, created our ancient life. These ancient beings created the earliest form of our technology.
I want to tie into that. So I'm about to read something that I found on Wikipedia, and it says, in 1976, a book called The 12th Planet, author Zakira Sitchin claimed that the Anunnaki were actually an advanced humanoid extraterrestrial species from the undiscovered planet Nibiru, who came to Earth around 500,000 years ago and constructed a base of operations in order to mine gold after discovering that our planet had heaps of it.
Exactly. Because obviously our planet has been the base of many natural resources that probably ancient civilizations could have used. But to tie into that, these ancient civilizations could have easily connected with higher level planetary civilizations.
Yeah.
Like the Anunnaki, obviously extraterrestrial life. They could have, from alien contact, we could have used these connections to make these pyramids.
Yeah.
To create these new technological findings. In my opinion, it seems obvious because the facts are honestly overwhelming.
Yeah,
to certain, to even polar coordinates, to locations all over the earth connecting to a certain number that is so exact and so specific that it's
impossible
to Harrison and I. It has no other,
there's, you know, no way that they act like, oh, we accidentally built these at like in these spots that are like ancient, like
relate to exact, like, exact that they speeds line up to of stars. Light.
And, they line up to stars. Yeah, that's impossible.
It's impossible. Unless you just got exact measurements, cuts from machines that were not from this planet. I don't care I don't care how exact your handsaw is, but I genuinely do not believe a handsaw could never, ever create a coordinate. Stones, massive stones, being able to be so exact to the thousandth of a decimal of the speed of light.
It's impossible.
It's impossible.
I refuse to believe it.
Yeah. And to go off of that, I think nowadays we really take advantage of some of the technology we have. And people don't like to avoid the fact that these ancient civilizations had these technological findings. They had really the foundation. They honestly pioneered what we think about nowadays. Yeah. In hieroglyphic archaeological findings, we look at these a lot about people can, you know, and it's obviously subjective about what exactly we're looking at in these archaeological findings. But in my opinion, I always think of them as, for example, there's some that look like satellites. There's some that look like computers or beacons. Beacons is a big one because there's also another conspiracy that we know a lot about, how the pyramids are actually used as a beacon for our planet, for other planetary civilizations relating to extraterrestrial life. And, you know, people like to avoid the fact that these beings could have created that. But in our opinion, it's not unlikely.
It's not unlikely.
It's not unlikely at all. Because for me, I'm very scientific. So I like to go based off facts and stuff. And to me, I like to be creative. I like to think that our civilization, our existence was not on accident.
Our existence was not on accident.
And to sum that all up, people, the Anunnaki are ancient beings that came to us as extraterrestrial beings that really influenced our planet, influenced these ancient slaves, these ancient people in Egypt long ago to create these pyramids, to use them as maybe beacons, as technological centers for a planetary civilization. And what else can I say? The stats back them up. Mm-hmm. The scientific findings and archaeological findings back it up.
They do.
Well, everyone, thank you for listening. I'm Cole Walton.
I'm Harrison Adams.
And that was the Conspiracy Cast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to What's Brewing. Today, I'm going to be talking about some crazy experiences. I'm here with Jonathan Thornley.
Hello.
Braden Smith.
Hi.
And Mason Block.
What's up?
All right, so I think we're just going to jump right into it. Basically, what we're going to be doing is just talking about our crazy experiences. We'll start with Mason Block.
So today I'll be talking about the time I broke my collarbone during a dirt bike race. I was currently in fifth position at the time going into the race. I went up and over one of the jumps, but my bike decided to stall midair and brake on me. And when I landed on the ground, I was pinned under my bike, and the person behind me ended up landing directly on my collarbone with his back tire.
Oh, shoot.
And you That's just hear good. It crack and break to the point where I couldn't race the rest of the weekend, which was a real shame because I had the opportunity to make it to Redolins, mm-hmm. which is one of the largest youth races in the country.
Sorry that that happened to you, Mason. That's kind of one of the more depressing, crazy experiences, but it is what it is. And I know you have a ton of them, so we'll probably come back to you at some point, too. So we'll get on to Braden's crazy experiences. Braden, what have you done that's been kind of on the crazier side?
All right, so when I was in about fourth grade, my dad made a tennis ball launcher, which was just a cylindrical tube that was about the size of a tennis ball, and you filled it with a bunch of gas from a little propane torch, and then you struck a striker on the bottom, and it would launch a tennis ball. And we used it a couple times, and then we just forgot about it until me and my brother, I was in eighth grade, he was just graduating college, or high school, sorry, and I had a motorcycle helmet, we had a swing, and a hill. So I had him go up on the swing with a bike helmet on, and I filled the thing with gas and put a tennis ball in.
You can already kind of tell where this is going.
And I struck it clean right on the top of his helmet, and he slammed on the ground.
Dang.
Yep.
That's pretty fun. It reminds me of the good old days. I'm just like, used to do crazy stuff like that. Jonathan, what about your crazy experience? I know you have something pretty.
All right. So back when I lived in China for like 2 years, I'd always go to the beach like a lot. And this one time, we had this guest with us who had no idea how to swim. And we were taking him along, me, my dad, my brother, and this individual, you know. So they were kind of, you know, naturally afraid to swim. They didn't quite know what they were doing. So me and James, my brother, we were just goofing off in the water until all of a sudden I just feel a sharp pain in my foot. I'm like, ow! And I talk to my dad and he says, forget, it's nothing, you know, forget about it. You know, you're just trying to freak out this individual who has no idea how to swim. You're just trying to get a reaction. I'm like, but no, I'm serious. And he's like, shut up. So like a couple minutes later, I feel another like just yank at my leg. And I'm like, ow, I think something's biting me, Dad. And he's like, shut up or else I'm going to do blah, blah, blah. You know? And then like 5 minutes after that, all of a sudden there's this fish that just bites me in the chest and latches on and won't let go. And I'm like, ah, Dad. He's like, shut up. And then he looks at the fish like, oh, there's a fish on you. And I grab it and I rip it out, right? It takes off like a small chunk of my skin and it just puffs up. And it turns out it was a puffer fish just latching on to me and just
like a suction cup?
Yeah, yeah. It's their mouths are like kind of round like a suction cup. Like a leech? Yeah, it just latches on to me and then I rip it out and it just puffs on the water. It just floats away. Yeah. And my dad's like, oh, I guess you weren't lying. And then he continues.
I guess you were lying. Well, there we go. We got the pufferfish story now. So we got a little bit of everything. Well, I guess I can go into some of my crazy experiences. So most of them happened when I was like a kid or like early childhood. But when I was about like 3 or 4, you know how we usually have like glass ornaments on Christmas trees and stuff? So one had fallen off because my cats had like knocked it off. And then the little baby that I am like walked over and started eating the glass that was like broken on the ground. And then I ended up having to go to the hospital. And the way my mom figured it out was I was just walking around and she was going to give me like some of this pink medicine stuff. And then she looked at my mouth and she was like, huh, why is there like already like stuff in his mouth? Like, it seems like he already took the medicine. But then she looked closer and was like, no, that's blood. I need to call the emergency room. And so we basically went there. And then I think I just made it through by eating like bananas and bread is like basically what they told me to do was like the best option because it was already in my system. But I'm still here. So there's that. But I would say one of the most like craziest things that's ever happened to me would probably be the time that I almost fell off a cliff and my belayer almost like just let me die. So it was at this camp called Camp Winton, and it's like up kind of like higher elevation, and they had this one cliff that's like a climbing wall that they allow everybody to go on at the end of the week. It's kind of like a summer camp type thing, but it's only like a week long. So basically I was going up and there's this kid that was belaying me and I was climbing up to the top, and then I started to slip a little bit and I kind of felt that there was no slack in my rope. I was like, I'm wondering like, is this kid like paying attention or what's happening? And then I fell, and then I realized that I was like actually falling. And then I got caught by, I think one of the counselors came over and grabbed it before it like slipped up. So yeah, so I definitely could have died in that situation, but it was, I don't know. It was definitely an experience. It made me a little more scared of heights, but then I just kind of got over it. I was like, it was just a slip up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's probably my craziest experience. All right, guys, I think that's going to wrap up our craziest experiences segment. We'll see you guys around.
Hi, everyone. My name's Cole Walton, and I'm here with Brady Morlag.
Hello.
And Tyler Daly.
What's up?
We're going to go over some overview of the golf season so far, and we're going to get started. Tyler Daly, how has the season gone so far for you guys?
So we started off pretty good. We were winning multiple times and on a good streak. And then when the quarter came around, we lost a teammate, sadly. And it was a big part of our team. And we started to lose, unfortunately. And we just slowly died down. And we're still trying to keep together and working together and hoping to continue this season.
How do you think you've played personally?
I think this year I played really well, actually. The start of the year, I was just getting used to it, so I didn't play too much or too well. But now at this end of the season, I'm playing really well and I'm really happy with how I'm playing. And I'm really stoked with it.
Nice. What do you shoot usually on the recent games?
So I've been shooting like a 40 for 9 holes and 37. And nice. It's really good.
That's really good.
It's only 2 over or 3 over. And I'm pretty happy about that.
Good for you. Brady, how have you been playing recently?
Recently, I have started to pick it up. In the past, I was shooting high 50s, mid 50s. But recently, I started shooting high 40s. Maybe if I get lucky once or twice, I'll shoot low 40s. But yeah, not bad.
Not bad, not bad. How has coaching been? So obviously Nakano is the coach of the golf team. How do you guys think he's done so far as a coach for you guys?
I love Nakano. He always helps me out. He just kind of gives me like small little pointers to like keep my tempo slow and just not try to hammer the ball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brady, what do you think about Nakano as a coach?
I think the cool thing about him is he's really relaxed. He never puts too much pressure on you. And you see all these other coaches from other schools, they're all putting pressure on their kids to shoot low. But Nakano just keeps us relaxed and encourages us.
Nice, nice. Also, how has PVLs gone so far?
Oh, so we, our first PVL, we did all right, but we came fourth placed out of like 10 teams.
It's not bad, not bad.
The upper team, the other three people, or three teams.
Which teams were those?
Those are Colfax, 12 Bridges, and Marysville.
So you guys didn't do that bad, relatively?
No, not really.
Okay, and did you guys play very well during those matches? Is that...
Personally, I didn't play very well. How did you play, Brady?
I didn't do bad. At the time, it was pretty good for me. I think I shot like 246s, so okay, I wasn't not bad, too bad.
Yeah, for sure. What about other teammates? How have they done so far? Like Ethan Smith, for example. How has he done during the season? I've heard he's been doing actually really well playing golf. So Brady, what do you think about Ethan Smith's play so far during PVLs and stuff?
Yeah, no, Ethan Smith has been a very big part of this team. He's either our one or two every match, first or second best. He struggled yesterday at the Ridge, but that's like the only time he's struggled throughout the year. There might have been one other time, but normally he's shooting low 40s. He's a very good golfer.
What about other teammates besides Ethan? How have they been playing so far? Is it the main three guys that have been playing really well?
It's just like, so the last three guys, they just kind of started. Mm-hmm. So they're just getting into golf. But in the future, definitely for future golf, Bear River Golf, they're going to be pretty good, I think.
Tyler, so getting into the specifics here, how did your matches go?
I had a lot of good matches, and I had actually a lot of cool shots. And one of those shots was I was 100 yards out from the hole, and I had my gap wedge. I holed out, which means basically I got it in the hole from 100 yards.
So was that like a birdie?
Yeah, it was for a birdie for two. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe it.
What about other matches? Like, how did you play?
Pretty good. Well, that was actually my best match because of that score. Yeah. And everything else after that was just going really well. I also shot, so it was actually an eagle that I shot.
Okay.
And I also shot another birdie, which was pretty good.
That's amazing, dude. Good job.
That was like a really fun match I had.
Nice. What about you, Brady? How did you shoot and what clubs did you use on your matches and stuff?
So my best score this year is a 42, or no, it was a 41. And that day I was just kind of automatic with my driver. It was just going straight every time, which is just a really good feeling.
Nice.
And I'd say I use my 8-iron quite a bit because that's like my trusty 8-iron. It's always goes straight. So
I love that club as well.
Yeah, it's a good club. And my putting somehow was good that day because it's normally not that good. But, you know. I didn't get no hole out eagle, but it was pretty solid for me.
Not bad, not bad. Hopefully get ready for playoffs, I imagine, or however that works.
Yeah, so over the course of the actual whole season, you gain points during each match, and you have to gain a certain amount of points to be able to make to divisionals. And then divisionals, I made it last year in divisionals, and I didn't make it after that because you had to shoot under 82, which is crazy for me at the time. So,
what about you, Birdie? Do you think, are you going to be able to make divisionals?
I have no idea, to be honest. I know Tyler will probably make it.
Maybe what about Ethan Smith?
Yeah, thinking Ethan will most likely make it. I'd probably right around that line. We're probably not making it.
It'll be close, for sure. You'll have to ask Nakano today.
Any farther than that, you guys would have to shoot really low scores to keep going farther and farther, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Good for you guys. Before we finish out here on this episode, we'd like to just ask you guys, you know, a couple complaints about maybe how the season's gone or about like little specific things like about putting or driving or whatever. You go first, Tyler.
Well, I hate three putts, and they just throw your game off completely. So yesterday I was playing at the Ridge against Colfax, and on the second hole, it's a par three, and I put it about 5 feet from the hole from the tee box, and I three putt from there, and it just threw me off for the rest of the day, and I played terrible, and I was just all up in my head. I was mad.
That's
and
okay.
After
That's okay.
Then the second hole or the next hole after that, I also played bad, and
That's okay. Brady, what about you? What's your, what are a couple things that have ticked you off?
Yeah, I agree with Tyler. Putting's one of the most frustrating things in golf, and part of that is LOP, where is our home course. Those greens recently got aerated, and it makes it so when you putt the ball, it's a lot slower, but also it like bounces the ball in different directions sometimes, so causing lots of three putt.
Yeah. All right, thank you Tyler and Brady for coming in and, you know, giving us insight on the season, and we will see you guys next week, hopefully. I was your host, Cole Walton, and peace out, everyone.